On your advice and my supervising counsel.
Okay.
May it please the court. Again, my name is Samantha Thames, and I'm with the Richmond Public Defender's Office, and I'm here for Mr. Thomas Reed Roberts on his appeal. Here, there is simply no basis upon which Officer Duane could properly search the folded lottery ticket found in Mr. Roberts' hand. This case should be found under Grandison, as there is no readily apparent illegal purpose to the lottery ticket in Mr. Roberts' hand, and therefore there was no probable cause to search it under the plain sight doctrine.
Isn't there more evidence in this than there was in Grandison to connect it to a nefarious reason?
If Your Honor is referring to the flight, that is the sole additional indicia of
that would be what I'm referring to.
Here,
headlong flight.
There is headlong flight. However, that is not, under cases such as Whitaker, that's not enough to amount to probable cause of search. It's an element that the court can consider for reasonable suspicion to stop and talk to Mr. Roberts. However, it does not amount to the probable cause required to actually search him. Moreover, we would maintain that flight is not necessarily evasive. It is
flight, and it's a high crime area as well, right?
Yes, Your Honor. There is testimony that it was a high crime area. However, there are a myriad of reasons as to why one might flee the police. It is indicia of a guilty conscience, but not necessarily evasive behavior. So here, we maintain that the flight alone does not, in the high crime area, Your Honor, does not amount to enough to believe that he actually was in possession of narcotics. What we have here
flight,
is
high crime, lottery ticket folded in a particular manner, officer with training and experience indicating that that's consistent with drugs, right? Those are the facts.
Yes, those are the facts. However, Your Honor, there also is no other, no reason to believe he actually was trespassing. There is no reason to believe he actually was the robbery suspect out of Chesterfield.
Except he did match a similar description in terms of the suspect, isn't that correct?
The officer is only able to provide certain details to the court, being the fact that the robbery suspect out of Chesterfield was a man in his mid-20s, white, with short hair and extensive tattooing. There is no complexion, there is no details about those tattoos. There's no height, no weight, no additional factors that would, or gauntness of face. There's no additional factors that could lead this court to believe that that was actually a reasonable, articulable suspicion to believe that he was, in fact, the person from Chesterfield, as he could not actually state or provide a picture or any other basis upon which
he didn't provide a picture, but he said that he matched the description, and he's a trained officer.
He did, but he also then arguably equivocated on Joint Appendix page 43 when he said that he felt there was more teeth, legal teeth, to the trespassing. So even he himself said on the stand that he thought the trespass was better for his argument, essentially. So, Your Honor, there was simply not enough here to actually reasonably believe that this was, in fact, the same person. Moreover, there was no reason to believe he was trespassing.
Did this start as a consensual encounter?
We maintain it did not. At this point, we're talking about a walled-off motel. I think that's a very crucial fact in this case. There is a wall around the motel, and, Your Honor, you can see that in the joint appendix. The pictures start on page 60. There is this wall. The officer does approach him, and immediately
the officer's not blocking him in. Is that correct?
That's my interpretation of the transcript. I also, admittedly, am not trial counsel, so that was my reading of the transcript.
Your reading of the transcript?
That he was blocking him in.
No, I said that he was not blocking him in.
And my reading is that he was blocking him. I'm sorry. Okay. That he approached him. This is a walled-off motel. He got in with 8 feet of him, I believe is what the record said, and was asking him questions geared towards determining. It was not the simple of, like, hey, man, how's it going? It was, are you here legally? They launched immediately into a questioning, interrogation of trespass.
He's seated in a car, no weapon drawn, only one officer, not multiple officers, no lights activated.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What are we to take from that in terms of the consensual part of the encounter?
That as soon as he began to approach him, that's when it no longer is consensual. And he's also...
When did he begin to approach him?
When he said, I believe it was, and Your Honor, I admittedly don't know the exact conversation off my head, but I believe it was when he said something to the effect of, either I don't have ID on me, or I don't have a room here. But the officer also conceded on cross-examination that there may have been a conversation about Mr. Roberts staying at the hotel, so there was more to that conversation than what was laid out by the officer. And we maintain that once he approached him, then that was when he was detained. Your Honor, also...
So it's a seizure at the point... At which point? Are you saying it was a seizure?
Once the officer gets out of the car and approaches him to interrogate him further, then he is seized, and no reasonable person in this situation would feel free to leave.
But he ran at that
point. He did run, Your Honor. And also, if it was consensual, then he could end the conversation at that point as well.
He did end it by fleeing?
He did end the conversation, yes, Your Honor. And at that point, once we get to the ultimate detention in front of the Chinese restaurant, at that point, we maintain that he was under arrest and there was no probable cause to arrest him. While I understand that handcuffs do not necessarily indicate an arrest, there was, however, orders by the officer for him to roll over, which Mr. Roberts did comply with, and then there's also laying on of hands. The officer lifted him to his feet, did not resist further at that point. The officer also testified that Mr. Roberts was not free to go at that point. So we maintain that he was arrested, and there was no probable cause
to
arrest.
Well, just because someone's not free to go, is that an arrest, or is that just a detention?
No, Your Honor. My argument is that all these pieces together would amount to an arrest. And if he was not arrested, he was just being detained on a reasonable suspicion. There was no reason for the officer to go into his hand and to pull out the lottery ticket, as trespassing and drugs, while in the officer's experience, they may go hand in hand with some individuals. Legally, they are very distinct issues, and they do not legally overlap with each other. So therefore, if he believed he was a robbery suspect, he believed he was trespassing, he was detaining him to investigate that further, there was no reason to go into his hand. There's no probable cause to search him. Moreover, there's no reason to think that this officer believed that the item in his hand was a weapon. He seemed to pretty immediately say, I thought it was drugs. And there is also no probable cause to arrest him at this point.
But if there was probable cause to arrest at the time that he seized the item, it could be a search incident to arrest, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but we maintain that he did not have probable cause to
arrest
him.
Understood. But if there was probable cause, a search was appropriate.
Yes, but once again, we maintain that because of all the information here, there was not probable cause. There is a discussion, as far as probable cause goes, Your Honor, the evidence towards trespass, there was a conversation about whether or not there were no trespassing signs on the walls of the motel.
What about the robbery, though?
The robbery, there was no reasonable circle sufficient for him to reasonably believe that this was, in fact, the same person. The details he provided were so minimal that this court can't review it, and it was extremely just a very generic white man, mid-20s, no other details.
Lots of tattoos.
Yes, and arguably, Your Honor, that may describe a myriad of people down by the City Motel in the City of Richmond.
Isn't it a reasonable inference if the officer saw the PowerPoint presentation and saw lots of tattoos that he would know what the specific tattoos looked like, and that when he identified somebody with lots of tattoos, that might be pretty consistent with
Your Honor,
identifying?
That information is not in the record.
Isn't it a reasonable inference from the record?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, especially given the fact that the officer himself stated, I believe there's legally more teeth to the trespass. I think the officer equivocated on the stand himself.
Well, his subjective decision as to which crime was more relevant is irrelevant to an objective analysis, isn't it?
I would maintain it's still a factor this court should take into consideration as far as, because we are relying solely on his testimony here to establish whether or not it was reasonable for him to believe it was the same person. And if he's equivocating that he thought there was more teeth to the trespass, I would maintain that he himself was equivocating on whether or not a man in his mid-20s with a sense of tattooing and short hair, what that description would actually fit my client to a sufficient standard.
And lots of tattoos.
And lots of tattoos, yes, Your Honor. However, this case is more akin to Grandison in that we do just have a lottery ticket. They are legally obtained items. And as they are legally obtained items, Mr. Roberts was within his ability to possess it in any crumpled or destroyed state as he so chose. And in this case, the only additional indicia of illegal activity that we have is arguably the flight, because as we maintain, there was no reason to believe he was actually trespassing, and there was no reason to believe that he actually was this robbery suspect out of Chesterfield. Therefore, we maintain that the officer should not have gone into Mr. Roberts' hand, and he should not have removed the item from his hand. That went beyond the standard that he had throughout this case, and we maintain that from the beginning, this was an illegal detention, and up to the point where he actually removed the item, opened it, and found the illicit materials. We believe that that should have been suppressed, given the court's ruling in Grandison, Brown, and Harris, and given what ultimately the court had before it in this case. Therefore, taken in its totality, we do maintain that Officer Duane had no reason to search Mr. Roberts' hand, and that search was illegal, and that the court erred in denying Mr. Roberts' motion to suppress. So
Thank you. Mr. Chanvel, you've got 15 minutes.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Chris Chanvel, on behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. Mr. Roberts is essentially challenging three stages of the interaction between Officer Duane and Mr. Roberts. The first is that conversation that occurred outside the hotel room door while the officer was seated in his patrol car. The second stage of the interaction was the detention that occurred outside the Chinese restaurant after Mr. Roberts had engaged in headlong flight and the officer had pursued. And the third stage, of course, is the search and seizure of that folded lottery ticket. For the reasons stated on the Commonwealth's brief, the officer's actions in each of those stages of the investigation were entirely reasonable and did not violate Mr. Roberts' Fourth Amendment rights. As to the first encounter, that encounter was clearly consensual. On brief, my opposing counsel in her opening brief argued that the facts established that the officer drove up to where Mr. Roberts was standing at the hotel room, so approached him in his police car, and then proceeded to interrogate him from the police car. Of course, the record establishes the opposite. The police officer was parked outside of the hotel room door when Mr. Roberts approached the hotel room door and began knocking on that door. And it was at that time that the officer began to ask questions, asked two yes or no questions of Mr. Roberts from his open car window. So the officer did not approach Mr. Roberts. The opposite occurred. And that makes Parker, which is relied heavily in my opposing counsel's opening brief, that makes Parker entirely distinguishable. And Parker, the police officer, actually followed in his police car, followed the defendant for a good distance down the street and followed him about 40 feet onto private property and parked his police car right in front of the defendant and then began asking him questions.
What about the argument that appellant made with regard to the wall?
I think that her assertion that the fact somehow established that he blocked the entrance or exit to that car,
That's not supported in the record.
It's not at all supported by the record. In fact, the officer testified that while he was parked in that parking space watching and observing, he noticed Mr. Roberts leave the hotel property and then come back. So it was quite clear that he was capable of leaving and coming back because he had done so once before. And Officer Duane never moved his vehicle. And then, of course, after those questions were asked, he fled the scene and was able to leave. So there's absolutely no reason to believe in the record that the entrance or exit was at all blocked. The record actually proved just the opposite. In addition to that, there's this argument that, well, the officer equivocated about how many questions were asked and how long that conversation occurred. The officer did not equivocate. He testified, I asked two yes or no questions. Are you staying at the hotel and do you have your identification? Which are perfectly reasonable questions to ask when you're trying to identify whether this individual is a robbery suspect based on the officer's testimony and belief that he matched the photograph that Officer Duane had just prior in the roll call just seen of the robbery suspect.
Did the trial court make any factual findings that are relevant to this?
I believe in this particular case, the trial court did not make any factual findings that were relevant there. And so because of that, it's up to this court to look at all the possible reasons in the record that would support the trial court's conclusion and read those in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. There's an argument that there was some sort of a factual finding that would benefit Mr. Roberts that there weren't no trespassing signs. Of course, that if you look at the page of the appendix that is cited for that alleged factual finding, that's on page 46 of the record. And there, what's occurring is a conversation between defense counsel and the trial court, and Officer Duane testified there were numerous no trespassing signs around this property. And then in her own case, I think it was on cross-examination, Mr. Roberts, through counsel, introduced some Google photographs that were taken from the street of this apartment complex and asked the officer, does this fairly describe, depict what you remember seeing? He said yes. I never asked the officer, do you see any no trespassing signs? Does it fairly depict whether or not there are no trespassing signs? That question was never asked. And so then later when the photographs are introduced into the record, counsel argued, well, the photographs don't show any no trespassing signs. They're visible in the photographs. The trial court merely nodded and said, you're right, I checked. No photographs visible. But that does not undercut the testimony that there were no trespassing signs there, just that they weren't in the photographs.
Counsel, do you want to speak to the argument that this case is not really distinguishable from Greenwich, and understanding that there's flight, but in terms of whether the lottery ticket would be a lawful item?
Yes, Your Honor. So in Grandison, Grandison was a 5-4 decision by our Supreme Court. So it was a very
4-3.
Or 4-3. My apologies. It was a 4-3 decision by our Supreme Court, and so it was closely decided. And what the court held in that case was the only evidence that this folded dollar bill, which was an apothecary fold similar to the fold here, the only evidence in that case that it contained any sort of contraband was the fold of the bill itself. And so what the court, the Supreme Court of Virginia, held in that case, quote, because, quote, no other circumstances indicated criminal activity, that was not enough to constitute probable cause that the folded dollar bill contained contraband. So, of course, in a different case like ours, where there is other indicia of criminal activity combined with the folded object, here's a lottery ticket instead of a dollar bill, that does make Grandison distinguishable, because the holding of Grandison rests upon the fact that they only had a folded dollar bill.
And what are the additional facts here?
Here we also have his headlong flight, which of course is a strong indicator that he's been involved in some criminal activity. Opposing counsel argues that's not enough by itself. And we would concede that if you had to consider only that fact, that wouldn't be enough by itself. But what she's argued is that if you consider the flight by itself, that's not enough. And if you consider the folded lottery by itself, ticket by itself, that's not enough. And if you consider the high crime area by itself, that's not enough. And if you consider the fact that he matched a photograph of a robbery suspect by itself, that's not enough. But of course, in a probable cause analysis, this court has to consider all of those factors. And considering all those facts in the record, there's clearly far more evidence than was at issue in Grandison, making Grandison distinguishable and leading the conclusion the officer had probable cause to believe that a folded dollar bill did contain contraband in this case. Finally, I want to note there's an argument that because at the time of trial, an argument made by my opposing counsel, because at the time of trial the officer was not able to remember all of the exact physical characteristics of the robbery suspect, that somehow undercut his identification of Mr. Roberts matching the photograph of that robbery suspect. And she argues that, well, he equivocated about whether or not he was confident in that identification. His testimony at trial on this particular point was not at all equivocal. On page 34 of the appendix, he testified, "My testimony today is that he looked just like the picture." He never equivocated. He never backed off of that statement. When he was asked on cross-examination, well, can you remember anything about the person in the picture? Can you remember any specific details? He was able to affirm some details, but he didn't remember all the details about that picture. But he still knew and confidently asserted he matched the person in that picture.
Is there a reasonable inference from the record that if he saw a photo of the suspect with lots of tattoos and then saw this individual, that the tattoos might factor into the identification?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That particular physical description, but other physical descriptions that we might not have the benefit of seeing in the record, but that he was well aware of, having just seen the photograph some 30 or 45 minutes earlier. So what my opposing counsel essentially argued is that because at the time of trial, he perhaps no longer had reasonable suspicion that the person was the robbery suspect, because he no longer remembered all of the physical descriptions that were in that photograph, that somehow he didn't have reasonable suspicion at the time that he made that Terry stop. Of course, we don't ask, well, how much do you still remember about that individual? We ask, you know, what was your knowledge at the time? And he said, my knowledge at the time was that he looked just like the person in the photograph. So analyzing the record and through that lens, which is the proper lens, leads to the conclusion that he certainly had reasonable suspicion. There's also an argument in my opposing counsel's reply brief that what the Commonwealth is asking this court to do is to simply accept the officer's testimony that individual looks just like the individual in the photograph. And, of course, that is exactly what we're asking this court to do, because under the standard of review, this court has to conclude that his testimony was credible and thus that he credibly testified that the person matched the individual in the photograph, thus giving.
And they're not arguing that he was inherently incredible.
They're not, but they're arguing that this court cannot accept his testimony by itself. And so I don't know where else that leads you, except that for some reason that this court, sitting as an appellate court, cannot accept credible testimony in the record unless there are some additional facts in the record. And of course, that's just not the case and not the standard of review. For all of those reasons, we would assert that the officer's investigation, the short detention in order to determine whether or not who this person was, whether or not this person had any identification to confirm or dispel the suspicion that this person was the robbery suspect. That was the officer's goal throughout this interaction. He ended up using handcuffs because the individual had just fled. And so in an effort to determine who is this person, he briefly detained the individual, applied handcuffs, which of course don't by themselves transform into an arrest, and was able to quickly determine who the individual was. That was a perfectly appropriate Terry stop. The search and seizure was perfectly appropriate because of the facts that were issued at Grandison, plus many additional facts that we have here. And so for these reasons, we're asking this court to affirm the trial court's ruling. And unless there are any further questions from the court, I'm happy to rest on my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Thames.
Thank you. As to the first point, I was not trial counsel. That was my first reading of the record, and I still maintain that as far as the wall goes, it is relevant. This is not a open and free parking lot. While Mr. Roberts was seen leaving and coming back, I still believe that because he approached him within 8 feet, and we're talking about a walled-off motel, I think all these factors do go towards...
Let's just stop in terms of the word approach.
Sure.
I think what the Collins position was is there's not actually an approach because he's seated in a vehicle that had not moved.
I do believe he got
out. That's their position.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor.
I understand you have a different factual...
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe he did get out of the car and approach him with his wearing a full uniform, including a gun, with a notepad to take additional information from him.
But not when he asked the first question.
Yes, he asked it from the car, and yes, Your Honor. When he asked the first question, he was sitting in the car, and we also maintain that because he immediately launched into an investigation of trespassing, which, while it's not a felony, it's still a class 1 misdemeanor, it's still a serious...
But you can have a consensual encounter, can't you, when you get out of your police car with a notepad and you're approaching somebody and you're asking questions, as long as the person is responding and there's no other indicia of a stop, that's a consensual encounter, isn't it?
Your Honor, we maintain that a reasonable person in that position would not feel free to leave, though he ran. It, in totality of circumstances, and maybe he was not reasonable, but a reasonable person would not feel free to leave in those circumstances.
Well, as Mr. Shandoval said, he must have felt free to leave. He ran.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, also, as far as the elements of what we have here, we do have flight in a high-crime area. We maintain there was no reason to actually believe that he was the robbery suspect. I understand opposing counsel's point about the officer saying, yes, I saw a fisherman who looked like it. We still maintain that it has to be an articulable suspicion, and he could not articulate enough beyond just what he said.
Well, there was a description, though, correct?
Yes, it was a very minimal description, Your Honor. And as far as the trespass goes, here, while there was a conversation about this no trespassing signs, the pictures put into evidence do not indicate that, and therefore there is other evidence that goes against what the officer was saying about the trespass. Moreover, I believe it's also important to keep in context what Mr. Roberts was seen doing when he was at that motel. He was seen leaving the motel, he came back, and he was knocking on a door when the officer talked to him. And there was arguably this conversation about whether or not he was staying with a cousin. While the city motel is private property and they can ban people and charge people with trespass, people who stay in the motel are also entitled to have guests. So he was not caught lurking or skulking or, you know, messing around with their trash bins, what have you. He was knocking on a door. So all the indications of his behavior point towards someone who was trying to visit with someone at the motel. And then they immediately launched into this conversation about, you know, why he was there and et cetera, an investigation of trespass. So I still think that is extremely important in this case. So there is no reason to believe he actually was trespassing based off of that. So I do maintain that that we are essentially left with flight in a high crime area, and as that is, while I understand the court has not said that we in Whitaker refuse to acknowledge whether or not both together is enough probable cause, we still think that because there's more in Whitaker, it still is simply an element that the court can look to for reasonable suspicion to stop. And if the court is relying solely on reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Roberts, then he does not have probable cause to search his hand, which is what immediately happened, according to my reading the transcript, which the court's counsel and I apparently differ on some points, is that he did not research into seeing who he was. What happened is he was handcuffed, he saw an item in his hand, he immediately removed it, and he immediately opened it. That's the series of events here. So if we say that he had reasonable suspicion to stop him, did not have probable cause to search him, which is what immediately happened. And I think that is the point where we differ in this case. And we maintain that under Grandison and the following cases, that this is analogous because we do have this legal item with an alternative legal use where it was simply in his hand. I will also note, I did not read an apothecary fold in the transcript. I did read folded and clutched. So we have a clutched lottery ticket. All we have really is high crime area in flight when you consider what the officer testified to and what the evidence was in this case. And if there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down and greet counsel. And